This episode is brought to you by the Focus Features film, Hamnet. From director Chloe Zhao and producers Steven Spielberg and Sam Mendes, AFI hails Hamnet lifts the audience high above humanity. And now, the Golden Globe winner for Best Picture of the Year has been nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Actress Jessie Buckley and Best Picture of the Year. Hamnet, our stories live forever. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing in theaters everywhere.
Hello and welcome to episode 542 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's plus special guest. So M's and special guests, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me everywhere online at HeyDudeBig.
Shalal?
Hi, my name is Shalal, and you can find me at Every Mechanic in the Los Angeles greater area.
Car problems suck. And Clarence Moy, you can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. Sorry to hear about your car issues. Hopefully they get resolved very soon.
They will. We're replacing the engine.
Sorry to hear that.
So let's talk about something far less painful than that. Let's talk about this weekend's BAFTA Awards.
What a segue.
We're very happy to have you here talking about your two favorite things, the unpredictable supporting Oscar race, as well as Ella McKay. But first we're going to talk about the BAFTA Awards. And, you know, this weekend, last week we talked about the supporting actor race. This week we were going to talk about supporting actress, and kind of we still will. But we came out of last week going into the BAFTAs. We kind of figured we thought we knew what was going to happen. We thought Stellan Skarsgård was going to start to win things and kind of march to the podium, which he still may. And then we thought Teyana Taylor was going to continue her march through the awards race, and BAFTA said, nope, we're going to throw you a giant curveball. And they handed their awards to Sean Penn from One Battle After Another and Wunmi Misaku from Sinners. So we're going to talk about what that means for the Oscar race. What changes can we anticipate? And then we're also going to preview the Actors Awards, formerly SAG-AFTRA, ahead of this weekend's awards, where Stellan Skarsgård isn't nominated, and you know it's just a whole field of things, and it could start a narrative for someone to win an Oscar. And then, of course, we're going to jump right over to Ella McKay, the film that we all thought we were just going to put right behind us until French critics came out and said it was a masterpiece. So we're going to talk about that, and of course, wrap with the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. So, who wants to start us off with the BAFTA Awards? Joey, you look like a frog. Please.
Which part of the BAFTA Awards?
Well, let's end with the supporting races. First of all, who watched the actual ceremony? I did not. I was just looking at things online. No one here did. Okay.
I just watched clips. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Did you see a clip of something that happened? Like, I think we should talk before we talk about awards. I think we have to talk about something very serious that has been discussed over the past couple of days, which involved a person that attended who was featured in a film, or it was played by.
It's John Davidson.
He was a nominee. John Davidson. Okay.
Yeah, it was Megan, his story. I was gonna say, I Swear was the nominated film. It's like his story. I've heard it's really a really great film. The actor who played him in it won, beat Timothy Chalamet.
Won two awards, technically.
Oh, did he win two awards?
Well, yeah, he won. Rising Star one as well.
Which is a complete surprise, and I've seen some clips from it. But you know, this person in real life, John Davidson, has Tourette syndrome, and during the BAFTA announcement with presenters Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo, he yelled out the N-word, John Davidson, and not because it's because he has Tourette's. people obviously were really upset online. I mean, it's a hurtful word to hear. It's it brings up a lot of nuanced conversations about race and Tourette's syndrome and disability. And I encourage people to read Clayton Davis's piece in Variety about his perspective on it. But it's been very viral, and also this wasn't the only thing that happened. Like, there were this man has tics, obviously, and so he was also, you could hear him through, like, when Paddington was up there presenting, which I'm still trying to figure out how Paddington was there, but when Paddington, so this is something that, you know, this, and I guess they made a statement ahead of time, like, hey, this is happening, like, you know, this man is here tonight, he has these tics, so everybody was aware of it. So it wasn't like a surprise either. But there's the thing that's nuanced about this is, or like that people are freaking out about, is that they think that BBC and BAFTA handled this poorly because they could have edited out the tics. And also because they did edit out somebody saying Free Palestine.
For the second year in a row, they did that.
Yeah. So that's kind of where the controversy lies. And Jalal, you should probably speak more to this, but what have you been seeing online?
Real quick, before I get into that, correct myself. I thought he was nominated for writing, but he didn't receive a writing nomination. So just want to clear that. I, as we were talking about before we all logged on, this has been making me like ill all weekend seeing reactions online. So I really suggest people don't go online and talk about it. I think it's really nuanced situation and unfortunate situation for everyone involved, including Delroy Lindo and Michael B. Jordan and anyone else who was affected by it, as well as the man with the disability.
John Davidson.
Yeah. And I don't think there's a villain between anyone. I think everyone should be approaching it with empathy and understanding. And I've seen a lot. It's turned into a really nasty conversation about disability access and disability rights, where I've seen a lot of like misinformed posts about him online and about disability access in general, where people basically don't want disabled people in public. And I think there are ways to have really important conversations about access that we're not having. And I think people should just also remember there are children out there with Tourette's who are seeing this. We're also talking about it in the lens of a white man with disability and Black people who are affected by it. There are thousands, if not millions, of Black disabled people who also have to sit and watch this in a really uncomfortable way on the internet. And there's also a lot of people who are engaging with disability for the first time. So I just think that it's been really hard to watch. It's affected me personally.
It makes me so sad. And I was going to add, people should also, Balin Out Loud has a really good, she had a really interesting statement about it, about things too. If you are going to go online, even though Jalal just told you not to, but if you can't help yourself.
No, go engage with people who are engaging with this topic thoughtfully and with, I think, compassion and understanding to all sides of it, and not trying to create mass hysteria.
Yeah.
Agreed. I mean, I do think the producers of the BAFTA show who aired it online should have been able to, you know, bleep it. That's, you know, you can't, I mean, you don't, I've seen some comments online that said, oh, he shouldn't have been in the room. He should have just been on the red carpet. He should have been, you know, at the back of the auditorium. He shouldn't have been where he was. I mean, he should have the equal rights to a seat in the auditorium as same as everybody else. Like, you would never ostracize somebody else because they had another disability. So, I mean, you know, just you support that, but you should also make accommodations for it. So if you think he's going to say something that is against the grain because of his condition, then make accommodations for it. And to your point, they did for Free Palestine. So That just is so damning to me that's the villain of the whole thing, or the producers of that show who made the call to not mute it and to air it later.
Because the moment itself is really like, it's not like it's, you can miss, not understand what you hear, because it's heard.
Oh no, he froze.
Christ.
I can hear you, I think, now.
There you go. There we go.
Go ahead.
I just think it's you can hear it very clearly as soon as I think Michael B. Jordan is done talking. And it's not like you it's not a distinguishable word. Like you can clearly hear what he says. And it's really sort of just like, really, you couldn't fucking take that out of the show. It's really like, ooh.
I feel sad that we've humiliated multiple people in this. We've humiliated Michael B. Jordan and Joe Orlando. We've humiliated John Davidson, who does have a right to be. This is probably supposed to be one of the best nights of his life. His movie, like a movie about him, one that's about the very thing that he is dealing with. And, I'm not dealing with, he lives with. And I just think it's, what an embarrassing thing for everybody that could have probably been avoided.
Well, and just after the fact at the after parties, or I don't know exactly how the Baptists operate in terms of where they go afterwards, but Daryl Lindo made a comment and he basically said they did what they had to do in the moment, but no one from the ceremony came up to him or Michael B. Jordan and apologized or checked on them afterwards. Which I think is also gross. And like, there's reports that Michael B. Jordan's family, his parents were there and they were really upset and maybe cried and laughed. No one checked on that. It's just unfortunate. Now their experience is marred by that word and what happened when it's supposed to be a big night for them. It's historic nominations for them. It's their first Oscar nominations as Black people at the BAFTAs. That's already a Black Americans at the Baptist, especially, that doesn't happen very often with them, with that voting body. So it just, there's also a history of them not being welcome in that space. So it's just, it's awful how they handled it.
And John Davidson left early too, mortified by the whole thing. So yeah, just all the way around, just a bad thing.
So, Megan, one thing, Paddington Bear was there because there is a stage musical that features.
Yes.
That.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I know
so
that.
You knew that. Okay.
I'm trying to figure out how is it a small man? No, I know why Paddington was there, but why, how does
it's
he
a
get
a small woman? I think,
is it a woman? Like, I was just, that's what I was trying to figure out, is like, how did they do that? And it looks so weird. And like, it's just, yeah, it wasn't that I didn't expect him to be there. It was just like, how did they get him there? Like, how did they do it at all? It's just, it's impressive.
The more British an event is, I think the more present Paddington becomes.
Yeah.
I love his outfit. I want to just dress like, I mean, I kind of dress like Paddington Bear.
You did that in high school. What do you
I
mean?
Know. Was...
So the supporting races now. Most of the categories, with the exception of Best Actor, most of the categories went in something of an expected way. I mean, there were a couple of minor surprises, like One Battle After Another winning cinematography. That was a bit of a surprise. But the two supporting races, I think, were the two sort of marquee, not marquee, but the two main pieces of conversation that came out of the awards, where Sean Penn and Wunmi Mosaku won. So, first of all, what do you think about these wins and their impact on the Oscar race? Do you think all of a sudden now BAFTA voters, and I saw the percentages and something like 50% of BAFTA voters are also Academy members. Do you think they're going to sail in and throw support behind both performers, and maybe the races are so close that it does, put one or the two of the of those performers ahead? Like, how do you think it changes the race?
I mean, I think it just leaves it really up in the air more than ever because somebody was saying that, like, the last time they saw something like this was the Nomadland year, where it was like, I think Carey Mulligan got Best Actress for, was it Golden Globe? SAG went to Viola Davis, and BAFTA went to Frances
Francis.
McDormand, and ultimately Frances McDormand won. So people are like, Rumi's gonna win. But I don't know. It's like, it's really, it makes it really more exciting that you really don't know who's going to win. It could be any of them. I mean, Amy Madigan has been campaigning around a lot, and I see a lot of people like pulling clips of, her stance against
Aaliyah Kazan.
yeah, and like just like stuff like that, and like and how she was, what did they say? She was also like at two surprise wins or something. Like, I've just seen a lot of buzz about her still, just like, recognizing how awesome her nomination is. And I mean, Teyana Taylor has been everywhere too. I mean, it's clearly, I think, between those three. And then for the best supporting actor, I think that, I mean, we always knew Sean Penn was a threat. I guess he just hadn't won anything yet. And then I still see people predicting Benicio. So I don't know. I also do want to mention I think the other big surprise was Timothée Chalamet not winning. Because they said, didn't it? Wasn't it like, Marty Supreme like got not won nothing, right?
It's one of BAFTA's biggest losing
Yes, that's what I saw
films.
too. Yeah. So I mean,
Was
I
that a
think.
film response or was that a Safdie response?
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know.
I
Oh no.
Oh, Jesus Christ, really?
You're
I always
good.
think you're having this really, you're like gonna, oh wow, he's really, he's revving us up for something, and then he just stops.
Am I moving yet?
Yeah, you're
Yes, you're
moved. You're
good.
moved.
Oh, fucking Christ. So I've been thinking a lot about, and just in terms to talk about Best Actor, I think it's kind of, I just feel like it's kind of weird that Marty Supreme isn't like poised to win anything else because I was looking at this is, I don't think this means anything, but if going back through Best Actor, the only two performances that didn't win in recent memory, that won Best Actor but nothing else with it, is Will Smith and King Richard, and I think Eddie Redmayne in The Theory of Everything.
What
Everything,
about
every
the
single other
whale?
performance, what?
The whale.
He won
Oh, yeah.
makeup.
Makeup, yeah.
Oh.
So like The Brutalist won stuff, Oppenheimer, The Whale, The Father won adapted screenplay, The Joker won things, Bohemian Rhapsody, no comment. Darkest Hour, makeup, Manchester by the Sea, screenplay, The Revenant, other stuff, Dallas Buyers Club, makeup, Lincoln, other stuff, Artist, Best Picture, King's Speech, Best Picture. The only two performances going back to 2010 where it after won, but nothing else was the two that I mentioned. So I was like, does that mean it's weak? He's weak. Should we be looking at other things? Does he become the third person? I don't know. I currently still have him at number one, but I don't know. Yeah.
That is really interesting, because then maybe it is Michael B. Jordan.
I would
Now
love
I'm
that.
starting to think that we had
But
three podcasts. You wait, Clarence or Jalal mentioned it. Who mentioned it?
Jalal, I think.
Okay, that's because that's your that's an interesting pick.
Because the other thing that I was thinking of in terms of casting, now this is obviously the British. BAFTA's only had casting since 2020, right?
Yeah, it's only been 3 or 4 or 5 years. Let me say one
So,
more.
whatever has won casting at BAFTA has also had a performance win. Will that become a thing with the Oscars too? We won't know that for a couple of years. I swear, obviously, one thing's Anora. That's where Mikey Madsen like overtook
Demi Moore.
Demi Moore, thank you. Like, West Side Story won, Elvis won, Rocks won casting, and Joker won. I would have to see if maybe The Holdovers winning casting is the only... Find Joey Randolph won Best Supporting Actress. So a performance has, I think, tied to at least the BAFTA casting every single time. So it makes me wonder if one battle after another wins Best Casting, will there be a performance tied with it? Is it Tiana Taylor? Is it Leonardo DiCaprio? But then if Sinners wins, does that mean Wunmi Mistakeu wins? Or someone else? Delroy Lindo?
Michael B. Jordan.
Or Delroy Lindo. Know. So this isn't offering anything, but it just makes me wonder if there's going to be a correlation later.
Lots of conversation.
So I also think that casting category is a little... I don't think we should put a lot of stock in the casting category of BAFTAs, because I think that voting body is very different than the Academy voting body. And I think most, if not all, of the BAFTA winners in casting would not be frontrunners or even nominated at the Oscars. Like Joker and Elvis, I don't think are things that would go on to Oscar wins, or I Swear or Rock seem to be British things. And I don't even think Anora would be a front runner at the Oscars last year for casting, because of the fact that it was cast by Sean Baker. He doesn't hire casting directors, and I feel like the casting branch would be upset about that. So I think it's just kind of, it's an interesting anomaly, I think, for the BAFTAs, which I like. I like it when things are like that and have lives of their own. But then it also, but it's like, that's also hard to gauge, because like connecting it to the three acting categories we're talking about, does that hurt? I mean, that would also mean we'd have to take Amy Madigan out of contention.
She wasn't nominated.
Yeah. So it's just, I think they're, what's interesting about this year, sorry, my brain is a million places. I think there are lots of little factors and rules that maybe would have a lot of weight in one year, but I think this year there's so many different factions that it's going to create really weird things. That I think no one can be counted out at this point. Besides, I think we can count Inga out, unfortunately, even though she gives a phenomenal performance. BAFTA was where she was poised to win, and she didn't. I think we can count out Benicio del Toro.
Even though everybody on Twitter is predicting him.
But I think otherwise, these three categories each have three possible winners. Not including Ethan Hawke.
it's interesting too, because coming out of one battle after another, I assumed that Sean Penn was going to be the supporting actor front runner from that film, because of how significant his role is, because his performance is actually very, very good. There was so much conversation around that performance and around the Christmas Adventurers Club and all that. And then critics came in and said, we don't like Sean Penn, so we're not going to give him anything. And so people forgot him. And so, yeah, you're right, Megan, he didn't win anything. But now we're actually seeing actual people, actual movie watchers vote. And the first award of that conversation is his.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Which is also a narrative. Everything you just said, Clarence, is also a narrative I think we can put on Wunmi Misaka and even Delroy Lindo. It's like, when that movie came out, I myself had, and lots of people had Wunmi Misaka and Delroy Lindo in their Oscar predictions. And then I think the internet fodder, as time went on, we started to forget about them. And then non-voting bodies that aren't industry voting bodies, like the Globes or the Critics' Choice, moved on from them. But now we're having actual industry people, and it's throwing them at the forefront. So.
Right. So last week we talked about how we felt Stellan Skarsgård was the front runner, assuming that he was going to win at BAFTA. Now he didn't win at BAFTA. He can't win at SAG because he's not nominated. So really, the next thing he could possibly win would be an Oscar. Do we? I mean, and I don't think you can call him the de facto front runner anymore.
I still think Delroy Lindo is the front runner in that category. That's my ride or die throughout this entire thing. Because I think that it was such a surprise that, sorry, my dog. It was a surprise that he got nominated. And I think people were going to be very just like willing to throw their vote that way. And it's also like a career type of like nominate a career win too. But you could say the same thing about Stellan Skarsgård. So, but that's who I'm going with.
I just wish he had gotten nominated at SAG.
Yeah, I know.
That
I
is
know, because, yeah.
right now. Because Miles Catton. Catton or Canton? I'm sorry.
I thought it was Caton.
Caton.
Hey,
Caton.
Caton? I mean, he not took, but like that was
Yeah.
a job that should have gone to Delroy. So it's interesting that they didn't go there. But I don't know. I think this category, I think, Megan, you were talking about different categories being compared to different things. This is, I think, to me so far, is very reminiscent of Regina King this year and
I
Sabrina.
literally just checked if she wasn't nominated at BAFTA either.
No, she wasn't
Oh,
nominated at SAG.
no, she lost Emily Blunt there. So, like, I think in the end, Stellan Skarsgård fills that role. He's well known. He's popular. It would be a career thing. People are going to vote for, especially if there's not a clear alternative. There's multiple alternatives. And also sentimental value is more popular with the Academy than it's been popular in other branches. Like it SAG liked sentimental value, but I think the Academy went even harder for it to
Yeah,
really
they
help it
did.
propel it a little bit.
You mean BAFTA? SAG did not like sentimental value.
What did I say?
You said SAG liked sentimental value.
Oh,
Oh,
I thought
I'm
you said
sorry.
you
No, I'm
didn't
sorry.
like
Oh,
them.
sorry. Yeah, well, SAG didn't nominate it at all, which
Right.
I don't think is a critique of the film. I think people have to remember also that SAG is a SAG, DGA, PGA, WGA are industry awards. They're guild awards, they're union awards, which is why I'll never call it the actor. We're at a time where COVID and the strikes decimated this industry, and it's hard for anyone to work. So it doesn't surprise me that they want to spend that time in their voice, uplifting union projects within the industry, which I think is a reason Anora also became the upfront runner. But yeah, sorry, I meant BAFTA like sentimental value, but not as much in comparison as the Academy, which where it overperformed.
So, looking forward to this weekend, we do have the Producers Guild on Saturday night and Sunday night. We've got the SAG Awards, the Actor Awards. Starting with Producers Guild, who do you all have for the Producers Guild? I'm going
Well,
to go with Sinners.
I always feel, and this is not really a reason to go with this, but I mean, I always feel like part of me wants to pick or predict something that is like a big moneymaker that producers are like, yeah. But I mean, like, Wicked didn't win last year. So I mean, like, I don't know. It just felt like I think I'm going with one battle after another, but I would, I don't know.
It was also like a hit, and also I think
Yeah, that's what I mean.
more of an unlikely hit to me because it's like, like a Paul Thomas Anderson. I mean, he always makes great films, but it's not like he's a box office juggernaut, whereas Ryan Coogler more or less is, I would say.
Can I ask a controversial question? You're
Sure.
saying One Battle After Another was a hit.
Yeah.
What
No, it
was
wasn't.
it?
It wasn't?
Didn't make money. No, it was considered a flop.
No.
Was
But
it? But it was
I
like
mean,
number one at the
well,
box office,
I
wasn't
don't
it?
think you're wrong, Megan. I think that narrative that you're talking about is a narrative a lot of the people in the Oscar circle are talking about. But in it made $70 million or whatever within the domestic box office. But how much of that was film bros going to premiere screenings where they have to pay $1 million to see it over and over again, where I don't know if the like, does the average person in America know what One Battle After Another is?
No,
they know what Sinners is.
They know what Leonardo DiCaprio has a movie. That's about it. But they haven't seen it. They don't even watch it on HBO Max.
And that's not me trying to shade the movie. I liked the movie quite a bit. I just question how many people saw it.
Well, the reason I'm not picking Producers Guild, even though I'm torn, because I can see people just still clinging to that narrative about the immigrant crisis that is so prominently featured in the first 30 minutes of the film. But I can also see people saying, you wildly overspent on that movie. That movie is deemed a flop because you spent $100 million on a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. And are they going to reward that?
That's interesting, too. I don't know. I'm still going with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably going to win because, you know, that very clearly has been the narrative of the film to get behind, but I don't know. This might be the last time I'm sticking with Sinners, but I'm going to stick with Sinners. Jalal, are you going with Sinners at Producers?
Yeah.
Joey and I are one battle after another together. Give me a high five.
There's nothing else it could be, right?
No, I don't think so.
Sometimes I go back to what's the year?
Oh, you're talking about like The Big Short and
Big Short years ago,
Spotlight and Revenant,
and Mad Max, which I think at this point people still thought was a contender, but I can't remember.
I don't think it's going to be Hamnet.
No,
I know,
Poor one after Hamnet.
I just want people to leave that movie alone.
I know.
I do too. Sorry, what were you saying, Angela?
People like Hamnet. I mean, a small faction of people on the internet are obnoxious, but like the Hamnets traveling along
with the Annie and McKellen.
A huge faction of people on the internet are obnoxious.
But I mean, it's doing really, really well box office wise for a movie like that. People like it. Every day when I go out on the road, I'm accosted by those sad Hamnet billboards with all the hands reaching at me.
Ah!
Vote for me.
I guess, yeah, there's really nothing else it could be.
Yeah, no. So let's talk about the supporting races. We're going to have our full predictions for the SAG Awards, the actors, up on the website on Friday. But let's talk about the supporting races here, because we do not have, in either category, a one-to-one match of anything else. Like, it's just absolutely all over the place. So let's start with supporting actor. We have Miles Keaton for Sinners, Benicio del Toro, One Battle After Another, Jacob Elordi, Frankenstein, Paul Mescal, Hamnet, Sean Penn, One Battle After Another. Now, two of those actors are not nominated for actors, Paul Mescal and Miles Keaton. So is this the beginning of a Sean Penn narrative?
Or does Miles Keaton get it? And then it's kind of for Delroy Lindo. I don't know why I'm like, I'm on the Delroy Lindo train, I guess. But I do wonder if it's Miles Keaton. Because it's kind of like, this is the only place to reward him. Or award him, not reward, like, here's a treat. Award him. And he is like such a big part of that film. Like, I mean, really, he's like, and it's like an interest, like, he never really, I think this is like his first film. I don't know. I'm going Miles Keaton. I talked myself into it. Did you see that?
We were here for that.
Yeah, we were.
My question about him is, have they really been? Has he been campaigning a lot? Has he been places like that?
I talked to him at the SCAD
film. He was there at the SCAD? Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He was lovely. I just think it's amazing that he and Chase Infinity got in here. as like newbies type of like, and then, I mean, anything could happen because I always think about Emily Blunt winning for for what was it? The
Quiet
Quiet
Place.
Quiet
Quiet
Place.
Place.
And like they knew she wasn't gonna be like, so I don't know, they tend to do things like that. So that's kind of why
Well, if
I can
we
see
pull
Chase
up our
Infinity winning.
chart, the last time there was a surprise in this category at the SAG Awards was 2015, when Idris Elba won for Beasts of No Nation. And
All
maybe
right.
everyone, including the last child performance to be nominated, which was Jacob Tremblay, which he beat here. So I don't know what that says about Miles. But I don't know who the Idris performance is. The Idris performance is probably Sean Penn as the over the top. I mean, it's not over the top. They're very different. One's cartoonish, but the very character-y villain.
It's gonna be really fucking weird to me if anyone wins from that movie. The fucking horrible racist piece of shit is the one who wins the
Hey, that
character.
is, I mean, that's Three Billboards narrative too, right?
Oh, God.
True.
I just got over that and you had to bring it out.
You
No
can have
one's
three
brought
billboards
up
outside of your house for me. Like, Megan, why did you bring that up? I'll come.
on.
No one's brought up that other alternative, though, that I think is a possibility, which is,
Elordi?
yeah.
Ah, really?
Well, I mean, this is a really populist group. They will vote for things. We'll talk about horror in a second with your girl, Megan. But
It's my girl.
Amy Madigan.
Oh, yeah.
They would. Awarded Emily Blunt for Quiet Place. Jacob Elordi is very popular. While they were voting for this category, Wuthering Heights boomed at the box office. And no matter what people say about that movie, it seems like good or bad, most people liked Jacob Elordi or were at least indifferent to him in that film. So it wouldn't shock me if he pulls it off here. I still don't think that would lead to an Oscar win, but.
No, that's interesting though.
If Jacob Elordi would go door to door to every Oscar voter's house and pick them up by the belt like he does to Margot Robbie, and when I was in the theater, I was like, oh, just inexplicably, he could win.
Also found my Critics' Choice. Did you remember he sent like a little thank you note? I found it among my things and I was like, it's a picture of him as Frankenstein. It's like, thank
Like
you.
taking a picture, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that
That's gonna be a
Didn't
decoration
help.
at my party.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So Megan's going with Miles Keaton. Jalal, who are you going with? You going with Sean Penn?
For SAG, yeah,
Yeah.
Champagne.
Okay. I too am going with Sean Penn. Joey.
I'm gonna go with Benicio.
All right, very
Just
good.
fuck it up.
So I think Jalal, you wanted to go talk about the horror leanings of SAG at times, and so looking at supporting actress, they have two opportunities to award a horror leaning performance.
Oh, yeah. I always forget to me that it wouldn't be as a horror leaning performance just because at the core of that performance, it's so emotional.
Yeah.
That I forget that. But yeah, I mean, like SAG is more than any other group, I think is very welcoming to genre. Whether it be Emily Blunt or Demi Moore.
Yeah.
And they're the
And there's
only ones
others.
that are giving us three witches.
Yes.
So it's interesting. I think that gives maybe Madigan room here
I think you're
to
right.
succeed.
Yeah.
And I think she will win. Right.
Joey, can you imagine a remake of Witches of Eastwick with those three actresses?
I have thought about it. I would love it. Let's do it.
Would be amazing. So, Joel, you were going with Amy Madigan. Megan, are you sticking with Amy Madigan?
Yeah, I think I am now. I'm feeling good. Oh, Joey froze again.
Yeah, we'll come back to him when he's not frozen.
It's
I
all. It's gonna kill me.
I think I'm I think I'm gonna go with Teyana Taylor on this one. Just to make it really interesting
Any
when
of
it comes
them.
to, well, I don't think it's gonna be Odessa
Ariana
or
Grande.
I mean, wound me. It could be wound me. It could be. I mean, of those three, of
Of
the
the
yeah, I
three,
don't.
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna be Ariana or and Inga's the other one, right?
No,
No, Inga's
Odessa.
one. Oh,
Odessa
that's
has Yara.
right. I don't think it's gonna be her, but.
I
Well,
think
that's right. Why
Inga
did I just talk
also.
about sentimental value not being nominated? Why did I?
Amy also gets a benefit, I think, looking at this category again, as we just read through all the names. She's the established actress here, where everyone else, Teyana Taylor's like second film, third film, Ariana Grande's second 1.5 film, Odessa Azion's
Yeah.
first film. Wound May's been in multiple films, but some a lot of which though are as bigger, higher profiles. So I think that also helps AB in a voting body of her peers.
Yeah.
So, Joey, who do you have here?
Just because that BAFTA win made me feel really good, I'm gonna vote for Wunmi Mosaku.
Nice.
I don't remember a race going into the Oscars. It was like, I don't know. It could be
Yeah.
anybody.
It's fun though. It does. I mean, it makes it
It's
fun.
fun.
It's so much better this than to have it prescribed. So I'm enjoying
Can I
that.
ask, to kind of wrap this up, this just came across my mind. Do we think this is going to be, if the SAG Awards are very different than the BAFTA Award winners, do we think this is going to be a BAFTA year or a SAG year? Because it feels like recently the Academy goes back and forth with which one they align with more.
Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't see. I think Sinners probably wins ensemble, SAG ensemble. And so it's going to come out of SAG, even though if it loses PGA, I think it comes out of SAG with some increased momentum, which would, I don't know.
Do you think, okay, say, this is what I've been thinking about a lot. Say Sinners takes both PGA and SAG. Do you think that is more of a threat to win Best Picture at the Oscars?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
It'll be like just last year where
Anora.
Sofia Gascón dropped a bomb on the internet, and then the next weekend, Anora domino affected three things.
Yeah.
And that's the end, right? And then we wrap up into the Oscars. There's our
Oscars are
precursor,
2 weeks
right?
after that. I think that's the last precursor, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
And
voting
voting,
starts on Thursday.
nope, and it wraps what on Tuesday?
I think so. Let me see.
Oh, that's a really short window this year for final round voting. Tickets.
But through the fifth.
The fifth, okay.
So
No.
it's 9 days.
Oh, that's okay.
Right.
No, I'm a liar. It's a week. I was looking at today on my calendar. I'm a fucking idiot.
All right. So let's jump to the conversation I think we're most anticipating this week, which is Ella McKay. So, Jalal, why are we talking about Ella McKay?
It is the 2027 Oscar frontrunner.
With no precursor is gonna swoop in and take it.
They're gonna write it in. So Megan, why don't you tell us what Ella McKay is, in case there are members of the listening audience who aren't familiar with James L. Brooks's masterpiece?
Marie, this is for you. Ella McKay is a film from James L. Brooks that probably would have starred Anne Hathaway if it came out 15 years ago, I think. It stars Emma Mackey, right? Emma Mackey?
Yes.
Yeah. as Ella McKay, which is weird. That's like a, they say it's like an a or a, not an acronym. It's some sort of an anagram of her name or something like that.
Mammogram.
Anagram. Am I freezing now? I'm freezing now. Oh no. You can enjoy this. Wait, am I
That's a
coming?
wild screenshot,
Am I
Megan. I
coming
already
through?
took it. I already took it.
No, I hate you. I hate you. Can you hear me? Hold on.
Yes.
Okay, I'll continue to talk as my face is like this. I think it's because I was updating my picks on Gold Derby and it probably screwed things up.
Turn your
It is.
camera off and then turn it back on. See if that helps
Okay, I'm gonna do that. Okay. I can't. It's just thinking. It's just thinking. I do love this face though.
There you go.
Wait, am I back? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're back.
I'm back. So it's about this girl who, what, first of all, I thought it was going to be about a teenage girl who becomes governor because she looked like a teenage, it's like herself as a teenage girl is not much different than her adult self. She's a 34-year-old woman who the narrator is just nuts about. The narrator is Marge Simpson, the voice of Marge Simpson. She becomes governor, but she's in, or she's becoming governor because her mentor, what's his name, Albert Brooks, is going to become part of a cabinet, so she's going to get this role, but she's upset because there's like a sex scandal where she was having sex with her husband at this like at a government apartment, and she's going to be in trouble for it. I mean, there's so much shit
There's
going
so
on.
much
There's so much going on in this. Like, can I,
so much
like,
and nothing at all, somehow,
yeah,
at the
I was
same
gonna say none of it is interesting or relevant was a thing that I wrote down. I also wrote a narrator should never be nuts about the protagonist. I think that's like rule number one. Like, because we're not getting a like an accurate view of this character. I wrote also like spit it out, Ella.
Also, why does the narrator know so much about the protagonist?
That's the other thing. Why? I
Yeah,
don't know.
it should have been narrated by Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes. There are so many things about this, which I was like gonna go in with an open mind, but I also felt like I was trying to like keep up the whole time. I felt like this should have been, it could have been a TV show. Like it's, it felt like I was trying to cram in all of this backstory and all of this. Like the flashbacks of her and Rebecca Hall were really unnecessary. Like I didn't even need to know any of that. You could have
No.
just said, "Oh, your dad was a cheated on your mom through the years." But we kept going back to that. Wait, so I wrote down, spit it out, Ella, and James L. Brooks, because I'm like, what's the point of this? Each flashback adds a new character and is completely unnecessary. Like each time they went back, it's like, well, let's add her husband. Well, let's add this. Let's add that. It's just like, who are these people? Like,
And we're not talking about the most unnecessary thing in the film, which is the subplot of her brother, played by Spike Fearne, I think is his name, where he is a recluse who does
yes.
online gambling, who had an issue with his girlfriend, who then he ends up stalking. And then can begs her to get back together with him after he hasn't seen her for the first time in 2 years or something like that,
Or is
like
a year. It was a
a
year.
year.
Yes.
And then
And barricades himself in front of the door so she can't,
right.
essentially.
And they have an awkward 5 minute scene, and then you never hear from them again for the rest of the film.
Right. And also, how did Marge Simpson know about that? If she's the narrator,
She's the voice of God. That's clearly what
it
the.
does take you. Yeah. It does take you like down that path where I'm like, what am I watching at this point? Is it just an excuse to put AO Edebiri in this film? Like, why are we doing this?
You guys are also forgetting the most important part of this movie.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's there.
Jamie Lee Curtis's wigs.
What does the movie open with? Ella McKay reading the definition of trauma from a dictionary out loud.
Right,
Oh,
right,
yes.
right. Yes.
So is her trauma the fact that her dad was a cheater?
The mom died.
And the mom died.
And her trauma is that she's bad at her job.
I was also kind of like, is she good at her job?
No.
I also hated the way it treated like women in this film.
Yes, it's incredibly sexist.
Yeah,
it
but
is misogynistic, and how she is terrible at her job. It literally doesn't have any character, and then she only gets, I mean, spoiler alert, she only gets to be governor for 3 days because she's so bad at her job.
Yes.
And she, like, she, when she goes into her cabinet meeting and she just babbles on and on and on and on and on and on, and then she, you know, there's the commotion at the door where her husband has released the sex tape or whatever, and then they knock her down, and it's just,
I yelled
like,
January 6th when that happened, like, in my house.
She gets a concussion, but they don't rush her to the hospital.
Yeah.
It's just inconceivably bad.
I also don't understand why it needs to be around the recession. I feel like they like make a point, like, even like again, they introduced the other cop character who's like, I really need the money right now. Can we go into overtime? Like,
yeah, what is like, that?
Yeah, and I was like, this is unnecessary too. I don't need to know about this guy. Like, is this just to reinforce that it's things are tight right now, like, for everybody, I guess. But also, like, spend too much time on that. Like, they spend too much time on characters. Like I said, none of this is interesting or relevant. I was kind of like, what does she learn at the end? That she's not good at her job, that she got married to the wrong person, and that, like, and it's like, what does she learn?
And her husband isn't even a real character in the film. Like, he's just awful. Like, just bad. Just, he's a bad guy. That's just, there's no nuance to him whatsoever. And it's the worst performance that Becky M. Baker's ever given. Because she's given nothing to do. And the biggest question I had, I'm sorry, this is the last thing I'll say, then I'll let you guys talk. The biggest question I had coming out of this film was, why can't Ella McKay hear Kumail Nanjiani from the back seat of the car that she's riding in the state in which she was born?
That's true.
She can never. What? Why was that a recurring thing? I'm sorry. What? I can't hear you.
Is it just?
Did he stutter? Are you deaf?
Is she just rude?
She's like, oh, you're brown. I'm not paying attention.
Yeah,
to you.
I was gonna say, that's what I thought. It reminded me a lot, though, of, like, it's like The Intern, but for idiots, is what I felt like. She reminded me so much of, like, this is like an Anne Hathaway character, and, like, you know, that she's talking to herself, and it moves so fast, too. I thought it was going to take place in, like, one day at some point, and then it's like, no, we're jumping ahead. She's going to be the governor.
Well, now imagine it could never have taken place in one day, because they waste an entire day where she's stoned on the couch.
Oh my God. Which I did relate to that as somebody who accidentally got stoned on Christmas Eve. But I was like, this is accurate.
And she campaigned against legalization. And I was like, who are these people?
Her politics were out of control.
I also like how Marge Simpson had to be like, and this was a time when this was not legal in her state. Like, it was like little pop-up video.
And that state is?
Yeah.
The state in which she was born.
Fuck yes. You.
She was also the third youngest woman to hold that office in that state.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Speaking of that weed scene in The Brother, the movie puts so much attention on the illegal activities of her husband and how that ruined her career and her governorship. It also seems that maybe her brother was also doing insanely illegal activities that also would have ruined a normal person's career. He was a bookie making $2 million a year on online gambling. And she was just like, okay. And like, no, that sounds illegal.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I mean, they never. I don't get the point of the entire movie. Like, I can't even see what James L. Brooks was trying to say. And it in some ways I feel like he's trying to be like, this is what normal people should be like, because they struggle with everyday things, and every, like, money, and or like families are crazy, or, you know, trauma sucks. But I mean, he falls into these old stereotypes, which, you know, he wrote one of the greatest films about women ever made, which is Terms of Endearment. Now, granted, it was based on the Larry McMurtry novel, but he brought that novel to screen, and those are two very fleshed out, very complicated, very complex, very beautiful characters, and then gave us a film about a woman who comes to terms with her trauma by screaming with Jamie Lee Curtis for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And like the trauma, I mean, I don't want to minimize anybody's trauma, but like,
I will.
I was kind of just like, okay, he was a dick. You've moved on.
He didn't cheat on you.
Yeah, like she like kind of holds on to this so much, like she's the most wounded person in the world. I want to be like, girl, you're a governor. Like you've seen people who've been through shit. Like, come
and
on.
Her mother knew about it, and she chose to ignore it. Like she made a decision. So. Joey, what did you think? You've been uncharacteristically quiet.
I think this movie features the darkest bowl of tomato soup I have ever seen. I think...
Wait, is it the tomato soup that's supposed to be watered down as well?
Well, like, she's eating, like... I'm a slut for a grilled cheese sandwich. And, like, at the end, when she's just like, I have a concussion... She's eating soup. And I was like, that is gruel. That is not the same. So even James L. Brooks doesn't know what a grilled cheese sandwich is. The minute I knew that this movie was unbelievable was when the scandal comes out and they call her Little Miss Nooner and her approval rating goes up.
Right.
No
yes.
woman who, like, she could, you know, cross the street the wrong way and her approval, like, went like, whips. That's, it was just like,
Joey, Colorado, a congresswoman got finger blasted at Beetlejuice and then got reelected.
Maybe it's in the state of Colorado.
It's not a one for one, Joey.
I know, it's Rhode Island. Island. Yeah. It's Rhode Island. We've covered that, yes.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But like, like, I don't know. If my teacher wrote...
Well, no, you're making a good point and then you're chunking.
Okay. Come back. Chunkin. Yep, he's back.
Come back. Yeah, come back.
God. No, if my teacher wrote on my school paper, like, you could be a force for good, I would be like, huh? Like, that would be weird.
Is she sleeping with the teacher? Come on. Like,
the rating's still going to go up. But then the other line that I, like, really, two lines that I wrote down, you're going places and you don't even know where you're going. Like, what does that mean? what's more beautiful than two people who owe each other everything? I was like, go fuck yourself. I don't know. I just also don't know, I've never heard or seen a movie about someone in politics where they just keep referring to it as, like, it's a job. It's a job. I was like, oh, you're the governor of the state that you were born in. they just keep referring to it as of the late shifted dominoes. I just don't understand. What a weird movie. I'm not like, I can give a lot of leeway to be like, oh, but like, who are these people? Like, I think like once I press stop on Hulu, they cease to exist.
I tell you what I thought one of the twists was going to be? Because they never establish Jamie Lee Curtis is like, which is she an aunt on? Is she sister to?
I thought
like,
about that.
No,
yeah.
Or is she sister to Rebecca Hall? So in the beginning, when she's like on the phone, when we fast forwarded to 2008, and she's on the phone, and Woody Harrelson does something to her that looks like he's flirting with her, and when she's like, "I've got news, you've got to come see your," I'm like, "They're fucking." Like, that was the first thing I thought. Did you think that too?
I didn't care.
Yeah. Like, I seriously thought she's going to be like, hey, I'm with your dad now. Like,
would you like it more if they were brother and sister or the other way around?
I wouldn't like it anyway. I think it's weird. I think it's all weird. Like, and then Olympia, we never meet, but Olympia is the voice
Tracy
of
Ullman.
Tracy Ullman. Yeah.
Why wasn't she?
Who was Olympia, the girlfriend?
Yeah, yes. The girlfriend.
Which is confusing because we also, as she's walking up the apartment to confront her dad for the final time at his place, yes. She walks past his girlfriend in right. the stairwell. And that's not Tracy Ullman, right?
No.
No.
No. And also, why is that a thing? I just don't understand why it's like let your dad go. Like just let him go.
And I wanted to shave Albert Brooks's head.
Why?
Because I don't know what is going on.
I didn't want it to be Albert Brooks. I wanted this to be a better movie and for Tracy Letts to be the governor.
Oh, interesting. I hated the scene where he's passing her notes as she's giving a speech. Like, I thought, I know it was supposed to be cute, but I was like, this is incredibly demeaning to this woman.
Was it supposed to be cute?
Yeah, because he's like, thank me. And then she's like, okay. And she keeps going. And then she's saying all these terrible things. And then he sends her another note. Never mind. Don't thank me. Like, I knew that was supposed to be the joke.
Why is she a windbag? We talk about Witches of Eastwick. She's given basically the same speech that the windbag gives in Witches of Eastwick, where the witches were like, cause a storm to appear and blow this away. And she's given the exact same speech.
I've never seen the Witches of Eastwick. Oh, I'm sorry.
So we all agree
why are we here?
It's not a good movie. I know. Let's just move on from that for a second. But French critics called it a masterpiece. They compared it to a Frank Capra film. They praised it as a sublime, wonderful comedy and a philosophical tale with melancholic questioning and sublime dialogue, and proclaimed it deeply moving.
Like my bowels, maybe.
Why
move me to another room?
Like, what do you think it is about this film that inspired French critics?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, it's the most un-American take on politics, I would say. Like, you know, you're absolutely right that she would, you know, oh, she's Little Miss Nooner, but her points have gone up. Like, no, it'd be the biggest scandal in town. Everybody'd be calling her a whore. Like, come on, this is 2008.
And I, you know, Frank Capra films, I want to tackle that direct comparison because Frank Capra films like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or It's a Wonderful Life, that you had, there was a level of competence within that main character. They weren't the best at their jobs, right? But they had great intentions and an enormous heart, and they inspired people to rally to their cause. She inspires people to literally throw sandwiches at her. I mean, you know, it's like, you can't call it Capra because they have no confidence in the main character.
I think the Capra-ness comes from, and maybe I'm way off base with this. I have searched my brain for a long time trying to figure out this comparison. But also when we talk about like what the movie is about and watching it, because I watched it, I was the one person who saw it in theaters, just so everyone is aware. And I don't mean among this group, I mean in America. and then I watched it again last night on Hulu. And I've thought about it for weeks on what this movie is supposed to be about. And I think what he wants it to be about is trying to sit and have this commentary about humanity and how we're all so lost right now. And we can't rely on these institutions to help us. The better way is for us to each help each other individually. Because the one person she helps individually is her brother. And that is the only Capra-esque thing that I can think of that loosely we could correlate between the two. And I don't even think she helped people individually. I think her brother was doing just fine, and she abandoned the state that she was born in.
Well, then she does help pass that thing for the dental, for the smiles or whatever, the teeth thing at the end.
Of all the tutors that Rhode Island has.
Toothy tutors? Is that what it was? Yeah.
I think so.
Maybe it's Capra-esque and it's like characters that are a little like, even the acting, I would say, is a little like, not over. Capra wasn't necessarily over the top. That was the style of the time. But I feel like it is, it does have that like old fashionedness of like a town, like a small, like, well, it's Rhode Island, but it like feels like a small town where everybody knows each other, even though it's not. Like, I don't know. There's care, like Jamie Lee Curtis is kind of like, they're all a little over the top, I guess, and old fashioned. Maybe
Is
that's
that
what
where the sorry to cut you off, Megan, but do you think that's where the Marge Simpson of it? Why am I forgetting her name? I'm sorry, but
Julie
I know I
Havner.
can't.
That's it,
Yeah.
Julie Havner. Yeah. Is that where the, what were you gonna say?
Is she the, because she's very old towny and she kind of knows
Yes.
everybody. Is she the kind of Capra-esque
Maybe.
tie?
Yeah. What, you know, it maybe, but it just it's like it's trying to fit a square peg into a round hole where, you know, she's the voice of God in the film, the narrator, but she's sequestered to the public, off to the office. She doesn't get around, she doesn't interact with any of these other characters. You don't even feel like she knows half the people in this town. So I mean, well, I guess she is in the audience when Ella's giving the blustery speech, but yeah, I mean it could be, if that's the intent, it's this screenplay should have been gone through, it should have gone through at least 8 more edits. It just is just a horrible screenplay.
Can I
But
ask? Sorry, go ahead.
no, go ahead.
I don't want to. I have a question. So, when it cuts to her, like, and her husband finishing having sex, do you think she likes to wear a scarf during sex, or there was a scene that was cut before, like, maybe she was wearing the scarf, she just never took it off?
I love that.
Probably heavily edited would be my guess, trying
I
to
just
shape this into
imagine,
something.
I think we are entering an era of sex wear, thanks to Wicked. Like what you will wear, the cardigan, the scarf, next, I'm hoping for a line of boots.
A line of boots, is that
A
what
line
you
of
said?
boots.
Anne Thompson was well ahead of her time with the sex scarf. Which, by the way, I'm still trying to wrap my head around, Megan, the fact that you haven't seen Basic Instinct or Witches of Eastwick.
I'm sorry,
Instinct
but I've
has
seen
something of a
Ella.
scarf.
I've seen Ella McKay, though. I've seen Ella McKay.
This
Yeah.
could have been, we talked last week. I didn't even know the sex scarf correlation. We could have had a sex scarf double feature between Ella McKay and Basic Instinct.
Yes.
I will watch that. I will watch it.
We need to
I'm not
have
gonna
a
put. Let's watch
Megan
Basic
hasn't
Instinct next week.
seen. Yeah, I was going to say we need to have a Megan hasn't seen these films film festival.
I know.
All right. I think we've beaten this dead horse quite a bit. So let's move on to the flash forward to the media that we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Jalal, why don't you go first? What are you looking forward to?
What's that? Sorry, can I see that face again? Ooh.
Sorry, I got distracted because I was reading about how Samuel Jackson is going to star in a spin-off of The Tulsa King, and it's going to be called the something silly.
You're not going to tell us what it is?
I lost it. Is it
Okay, I
like
can
the
put.
Fresno King? Is something stupid? I was just thinking about how our greatest actors are being lost to Taylor Sheridan.
Oh.
What am I looking forward to this week?
It's Frisco King,
Frisco
formerly
King.
titled Nolo King, which Frisco King is so close to Frisco Kid. The
No, I was.
Frisco, or the Cisco Kid was a friend.
You know, there's already going to be a porn parody called the Crisco King.
Oh, I love that.
I don't think I'm looking forward to, is anything coming out? I'm sorry, this is not for me.
Scream Seven.
Scream
That's
7 is coming out.
no, not in my world, not in the land I'm living in. But No, there's nothing. I'm rereading Wuthering Heights right now and enjoying that. Not rereading. I finished it like a month ago or a couple weeks ago before the film. And now I'm just rereading my favorite chapters and having a lot of
Nice.
fun with that. I'm finishing in on the Wuthering Heights train right now. I am finishing Task on HBO.
Oh.
And I
Okay.
like that show quite a bit for a lot of different reasons. I think it's a solid show. But it's so fun to see Alice and Oliver do so many different things, and it's really fun to watch her career take off. I think she's wickedly talented, and between Wuthering Heights, she was the kind of comedic relief of that, and what she's able to do in just between that and Saltburn and this, it's like three different actresses in front of you that I don't even know if I'd recognize if I didn't realize it was her. So yeah, I'd urge everyone to check those things out.
Joey.
I just got a copy of Wuthering Heights. I've never read Wuthering Heights. But I saw the movie. Alice and Oliver, the minute she comes on screen in that movie, I was like, I'm obsessed with this character, this performance, everything. I kind of want to see, speaking of Anne Hathaway all through this conversation, I kind of wish we got to see Anne Hathaway from the Princess Diaries pre-makeover in that part, which to me could maybe be an in for a couple of people. I did not know that Wuthering Hearts was so horny, or I did not know it was a revenge tale. Did not know that
The
publicist.
novel.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't know. I just knew there were like Moors and Sad and Obsession, and I didn't
Heather.
know.
Lots of
Be
Heather.
prepared for the most insane novel you'll ever read in your life, Joey.
I'm so excited. I'm gonna go see Pillion again, because I saw it on a screener at first, but I want to see that in theaters. There's a small theater that I just went to last night where I saw a sort of like not retrospective, but Peaches Christ, which is a drag queen. I've never seen her. I was so floored to see her, but she was touring with Mink Stole, who is like a John Waters staple. Pussy Willow's daddy. They just like sat in chairs and talked and sang weird drag versions of like standard hits, and they went through like meeting John Waters and stuff like that. And Pillion is playing at this one small theater that I'd never been to. It's really close to my house. The artwork around it is really insane. So I want to go see that. I'm still making through the Oscar movies. I'm determined to finish again before the end of the month. I think I have six left. So I think tomorrow I'm going to watch Sorat. So that's it.
Megan, what about you?
Okay, so Thursday I'm going to see Sack Squatch. Do you know who Sack Squatch is? The man dressed as a Sasquatch who plays the saxophone. I'm going to
Yep.
see him. Yes.
That this is
If
the man
nothing was
that
more
tours the
targeted.
country.
Wait, Jalal, you first. Go ahead.
This is a man that tours the country.
Yes. Yes, Sack
And
Squatch.
people pay to see him.
Clearly. I don't know what to expect. I'm really excited for it, though. Joey, what was your question?
It's just you and Sack Squatch in the room.
No.
It's
I
like,
love that, though. That's a different kind of effect. He looks so disgusting.
I'm disgusted. I'm concerned.
I'm seeing Sack Squatch. I'm still enjoying The Beauty, The Pit, Love Story, Drag Race. Jessie Ware's Ride is a really great song that I really love. And you know what? I think I might try to watch Basic Instinct and put that on my list.
Next week's podcast.
All right. I am continuing my rewatch of X-Men movies for some reason, because I need some gentle entertainment in my life. And I think the next one, Days of Future Past, which I think is thought to be the better of the most recent ones. And TV wise, probably going to wrap The Love Story show at some point very soon.
Good shit.
Is it all out now?
No, we have screeners for it.
Do we have episode 9 yet?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay. I have a question
real quick. Yes.
Speaking of the story, and Joe just mentioned episode 9. Is there 9 episodes worth of story?
I personally, when I sat down to watch it before it came out, I've seen 6. I've seen through their wedding. I was really waiting for this to feel too stretched out, but I don't feel that at all. So I'm not sure how the last 3 episodes will play out, but I'm surprised by the pacing of it for me personally.
No. I will probably also go see Scream 7, just because it's been a while since I've been to the movies. And wrapping up my Dan Brown book Inferno, and may watch the film for the first time, which was one of Ron Howard and Tom Hanks's biggest flops of their careers. So anyway, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3 M's, contending co-founders, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, me, Clarence Moy, joined by Jalal. Thank you for joining us, Jalal. And asking you to rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube. Click like and subscribe or wherever else you find us. And wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.